Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. We're glad you joined us here on the Cyberhood Watch. We have a wonderful show today. Dave and I have been so busy. I think that we really enjoy our Tuesday morning because we actually get to slow down and kind of step back and take a look at the week and see what we've done, what we've accomplished, and really focus on our radio show and our guests. And this week is no different. If you have been to Blog Talk Radio, you're going to see that we have a brand new logo. This was pretty exciting. We've been working on this for quite a while to get the right image and the right look. And a lot of the things that went into the process of thinking about this have really come over the last 6 months. The ideas and the coming together of the logo is a combination of almost 2 years' worth of work. So It's rather interesting how, you know, the process of life and the process of business takes you on a journey. And we actually ended up with something that was completely different than what we started out with. And it really fits what we want to represent and what we want you as an audience and visitors to our blog and really the message we're trying to get out to the whole world is that we are one cyber world together. And that really is what we are in this almost the last year of the decade. This is so amazing to me. I was thinking the other day, it's hard to believe that it's almost 2010. I think everybody was so set on the year 2000 that they're like, wow, you know, we got kind of past that, and it just seems like this last 10 years has just gone by so quickly, and we're almost going into the next decade. And one of the things that really have shown us about what our country is going through and really even the world is some of the problems that we see are so horrendous because we're actually seeing them from a global point of view. And I think this is what Dave and I have really learned the last year or two is that we can make a difference. We are one family as far as the world is concerned. And, you know, what our show has done over the last 6 months has really started representing that. We want you to realize that we haven't stopped doing our technical things and how to keep your family safe on the internet. In fact, we just added a brand new company into our fold this last week as well. Not only did we get a brand new logo, but we've added the opportunity for the people who work with us directly and people who come to our website to be able to save and protect all of their data online. It's called Cloud Backup. In other words, in the future, which is now, most everything that we do will be done outside of our own computer, our own PC. Everything will be stored online outside of our home or outside of our cell phone. That'll just be the operating device that handles everything. So Dave and I have taken that step this week to actually put that together. So not only are you going to see those changes in the future? But we're trying to be there and be a part of that and help you as well. So check that out. It's on our radio show. You can go down. If you just scroll down to the bottom, you're going to see the brand new magazine that Dave put out this week talking about the service, talking about what's coming in the future and why you want to be safe and be prepared. And some of the features and I almost say it's a luxury because you don't have to do anything. Once you set up the parameters, everything is stored and it's safe and it's done automatically. So it's really, really cool. So with that out of the way, we're going to go ahead and open up our show. Our lines are open up today, so let's go ahead and make sure that everyone knows our number. It is 347-324-3429, and we have an awesome guest on today. We are so excited. This is something that we have been working with for the last few months, and especially the last few weeks, so I'm sure Judy is going to feel right at home because she has such a wonderful message about families and relationships and some of the struggles and challenges that we face in the year 2009 going into 2010. That's one of the kind of the facts that we need to find out is that 50% of the people go through what she's going to talk about today. So it's one out of two, folks, and you're going to either be one of those people or you're going to know someone that is going through this. So this is going to be a wonderful opportunity for you to hear her message and also call in. You can use our chat line as well. So without any further ado, I'm going to introduce Judy Grable, and she is a step family coach, and she's the owner of Sensible Steps LLC. And she's going to come on and talk a little bit about step families and relationships and what the kids go through and some of the choices kids make based on that. So hopefully you can think of some really great questions. Dave and I have a handful of them, and we'll try to get through as many as we can. Judy, if you don't mind, would you just take a couple of minutes and tell a little bit about you, about maybe a little bit of your journey getting to this point? We always find it really fascinating as people tell us their story of just the choices they made, the things that happened in their lives that kind of bring them to where they are now, because you're really making a difference in a lot of people's lives. I know you just recently put up your website and really gotten your business rolling. So this is kind of this is really a leverage point for you to kind of, you know, step this up a notch and really take it out there, a wider audience, a wider message. And so share with us a little bit of what you kind of seen over the past few years that brought you to where you are today. Welcome.
All right, well, thank you very much, both Bill and Dave. I appreciate the intro. That was wonderful. And I'd love to share a little bit of my experiences and what brought me to this point in my life. And based on the fact that this is geared towards a lot of parents who are concerned about their children, I was going to start with an experience from my childhood, because I'm an adult child of divorce. My parents separated when I was 8. And part of the reason was because my dad was already dating another woman. And so I grew up in a lot of ways. I fit the stereotype of adult children of divorce, and in other ways I didn't. One of the ways I fit the stereotype is that I blamed myself for my parents' divorce, and that is very common. And I had a lot of anger issues. A lot of it was related to the fact that I blamed myself, and I was mad at myself, but I was also mad at the entire world about the breakup. So that I dealt with that by getting into fights with my older sisters. And many of the times I was the person that was instigating the fights. And I don't mean verbal either. We actually had knocked down, you know, kid fights, rolling on the floor and so forth. And I got away with that a lot because my mom had to work more jobs now to bring in more money. So she had 3 jobs and was trying to go to school, college, in order to better herself and improve her situation. I hated my dad's girlfriend, just on principle. And in hindsight, I realized I didn't really have a good reason at first to hate her. It was really, I guess, because she represented the demise of my family. She represented, and really this is a subconscious thing. It's not like I could conceptualize that as a child. Only in my adult years can I look back and understand the reason why I hated her. It was just because she represented why my family wasn't together and why I had all these anger issues. But as I got older, I did work through those anger issues. I got over them myself. I worked through them. My college really helped a lot, and my growing spirituality really helped a lot, too. But I actually had to learn from the hard way what really entailed a healthy relationship versus an unhealthy relationship. Most adult children of divorce tend to divorce more often than children of intact families. And part of the biggest reason for that is because we lack a positive role model. We don't see every day what a healthy marriage looks like. So I had to go out of my way to look for what a healthy marriage is, to understand that arguments are healthy. It's not the fact of having an argument that's unhealthy. It's how you deal with those arguments and how you resolve those conflicts and how you treat people and do the moral things in between there that makes a difference. But I had to learn all that on my own. But by the time I hit the age of 30, I feel like I was equipped with all the things necessary, and I felt that I wanted to have a family of my own. And that was when, you know, a year and a half later, I fell in love with somebody who had children. And a year later, we moved in together. He had three children and grandchildren. And being an adult child of divorce and dealing with my parents' significant others, I didn't have a lot of high expectations. I thought I would know what to expect. But what I realized is that the experiences as a stepmom was very different. And unless you've actually been there, you really don't know what to expect. And unfortunately for me at the time, I did not know any other stepmothers. The only people I had to talk to about my situation were other divorced children of adults or other adult children of divorce, and their advice to me was to leave them. It was just simple as that, which is very common among adult children of divorce. They either stay in an unhealthy situation or they bow out very quickly. They don't always give it a chance. I wanted to give my relationship a chance because I was really in love with them. I wasn't going to leave. I wasn't going to give up until I had tried everything that I possibly can to make it work. But I was dealing with, I didn't know because I had not experienced before how to get through those issues. And we had even sought out counseling. That was like our last-ditch effort, was to seek a marriage counselor. And even though I got my degree in sociology and psychology, I felt that, you know, I needed an outside perspective to help me see the forest through the trees, so to speak. You know, if it was somebody else, you know, I could probably see it more clearly. But because it was me, you know, I felt maybe I need someone else to help me put my situation to perspective. But we didn't last more than three counseling sessions, and we ended up breaking up shortly after that. And it's later that I got certified through the Step Family Foundation. And through that education, I can finally, in hindsight, understand what we could have done differently to get better results. And since that time, I've talked to many, many families, many adults, men and women, adult children of divorce, and people who have been in the step family and have since refused to be in another step family as an adult because it didn't work. And they wished in vain that they had a step family coach or knew of somebody who had been through it and could have helped them go through it themselves. That, in essence, is why I formed my company. And that is why I have a passion to keep going, and that's what drives me to try to reach more families. My desire is to reduce that separation rate for more step families. And having the perspective, the personal experience and knowledge of an adult child of divorce as well as a stepmom, I think it allows me that an extra insight that a lot of counselors don't have. So I can help other families.
Wow, Bill, I think we can almost wrap it up right here, don't you? that was a lot of great information. I wanted to kind of jump back to the beginning of your conversation, and you talked about kids and how they blame themselves. I hear that all the time, and I'm sure everybody else does. What is that triggering fact that, you know, what causes them to think it's their fault? And then how do you help a child realize, you know, actually they probably had very little to do with it?
Well, you know, that's very, I'm glad you asked that question, because once I tell you part of it, say, wow, why didn't I think of that? But most parents don't think of it. Telling the kid in and of itself, just telling them, you know, that this wasn't your fault. This was between me and, well, if it's the mom, it's between me and dad. It was, you know, it was nobody's fault. Just telling them would make a big difference. But because parents don't realize that their kids are actually blaming themselves, the kids don't think it's such a subconscious thing for the kids that they don't even they don't mention it. They don't think to mention it. They don't even consciously realize that they're blaming themselves. So they don't think to mention it. The parents don't realize they're feeling it. So nobody says anything. So one is, as a parent, we have to explain to our kids in an age-appropriate manner why they got a divorce in the first place and how it had nothing to do with them. And to relay another personal story for me is that I had actually, mom was out of town or she was working, my dad would invite his girlfriend over. And as a child, even though I was really young, I knew that that was wrong. I had this intuitive sense that that was wrong. Not everybody has that intuitive sense of what's right and wrong, but when it came to that, I knew. It was my Catholicism in me, I don't know. But so when my mom got home, it would come out. I would mention it to her. I was very distraught. And because of that, that was part of the reason why I personally had blamed myself. Because if I hadn't have told mom, then, you know, they wouldn't have thought, it wouldn't have erupted. But, you know, as an adult, I look back and say, well, yeah, that's true. And I don't, you know, we always tell kids they're not supposed to tattle. So tattling is wrong. But I didn't cause my dad to cheat. And my mom already knew, you know, or to know. But there's little things like that that kids do that they don't realize has nothing to do with the actual outcome.
Yeah, that's got to be a really difficult situation for a child to be in. And yeah, I can understand where you would probably think that you were partly the cause because you told, but yet you're right. You didn't ask your dad to do the things he did. And it was,
right.
And imagine as a child, that was a lot to, you know, I'm just thinking, I wonder what the other result would have been if you didn't tell and you lived with it. I mean, that's a whole other, another
right.
ball game there.
Right. Well, I will bring up another reason why, because a lot of children don't necessarily tell and they'll still blame themselves. So I'll bring up another reason why a lot of kids sometimes subconsciously blame themselves. Sometimes it's because they hear the parents arguing, and when they hear the parents arguing, they'll hear their names mentioned. Oh, well, you did this with the kids, or you did that, or you feel this way, or you feel that. I mean, the kids hear their parents arguing, and even if the underlying reason for the parents arguing has nothing to do with the kids, but if the kids hear their name, or not even by name, but just hear kids, the word kids being mentioned in any capacity, sometimes they'll start blaming themselves. So that's another reason why sometimes kids do tend to blame themselves. And I don't want to give across the message that parents should not, when they argue, they should make a sincere effort to not be an earshot of the kids. But that's not always possible.
Right, and I agree with that. You know, it makes me think that when we talked about kids blaming themselves and you mentioning, you know, it's really very simple, the fact that you just explain to them that it isn't their fault. Are there any other ideas that should be mentioned that we wouldn't even think about that causes problems like the one with a child blaming themselves?
Yes. There is another thing, you know, sometimes parents are so busy going through all of their own emotional issues that sometimes they forget to take the time just to tell their kids how much they love them. And it's important from both parents, even the non-custodial parent, as well as the custodial parent, just to tell them how much they loved them and appreciate them. And there might be little things here and there, just spending more quality time with the kids is very important. A few extra minutes a day just to touch base with your kids, just to give them, and if you're the non-custodial parent, to call your kid, say, I was thinking about you, and I love you, and what did you do today? you know, those little things will make a big difference.
Wow, it's, you know, it's, I'm hearing what you're saying, and it's so similar. It could be applied to a lot of different areas that Bill and I deal with when we're talking to other guests and the family issues and how to keep kids safe on the internet. I just want to kind of pull it away a little bit and ask you another question, more so children, internet, families, and maybe more children that are from broken homes are more susceptible. So how much do you think that the when we look at the internet and the social networking that's going on, and do you think there's a correlation between that, this explosion in social networking, and a subconscious need to belong to a family that maybe children didn't get or they're looking for?
Yes, I think there is a correlation there because, well, and I could separate this between children and adults because the social media is very prevalent among adults too, and they are also looking for family and like-minded individuals. And as we get older, we tend to have less social networks. So that's one reason. As kids, though, they are also looking for other kids who are going through what they're going through. So in the situation of kids from a broken home, they want somebody else that can identify with their problems. They want somebody to identify with what they're going through. And maybe the other kids at school or the other kids in their neighborhood aren't going through what they're going through. So because those people that are readily accessed and accessible to them in person don't understand that now they have the internet who can reach, you know, a zillion people from all over the world, and you're going to find somebody who's going through what you're going through. There's no way to not, you know, with the billions of people. And so, yes, there's definitely a correlation there. I mean, kids need someone to vent to. They need someone. They have this internal drive to try to understand what they're going through or to work through it. It's called, you know, that, you know, in psychology, we say it's the natural tendency to thrive. It's just this internal drive we have to try to be whole emotionally and mentally. And that drives people to look for other people who can help them through their issues. It's kind of on a subconscious level, you know, more on the conscious level, they just want people to understand them, just someone to talk to about their issues. And the internet is available. It's in all your homes. It's on your computer. It's on your, you know, PDA. You take it to school with you. You know, you can't get more available than that. And there's always somebody to talk to online.
It was just making me think, Judy. I was, I found it rather interesting. I was thinking as you were talking, and this may sound silly, but I just realized that, you know, in my own situation, I'd actually gone through what you're talking about, and it, for the life of me, I don't know why I didn't think about that until just now. And I think one of the reasons is when my mom and dad got divorced, I went to live with my grandma and grandpa, and that's kind of, I was such a little guy, I was just 3 years old, so my life basically started at that point. But it was really odd. I just kind of, in my mind, I was thinking, you know, I thought those thoughts when I was littler. I thought it was my fault, and that's why I was with my grandma and grandpa. And both my parents were deaf, and so back in the 60s, it was really difficult for people with special needs especially to kind of fit in and have the ability to get jobs, to have work, to do all the normal things that we take for granted. So it was really hard. And my dad felt like that, you know, my grandma had a much better, you know, it was a little small town where she was from. And I know he was just trying to work things out and do that. And do what was right for me, do the best thing that he thought was right for me at the time. And I just realized in my mind, I was like, wow, I'd actually done that when I was little and hadn't really realized it until this moment that I really had thought that it was my fault because I was in, you know, I came, they were both deaf, and all of a sudden I put all this pressure on their family to do all of these things, to be moms and dads and, you know, the whole story. And I just realized, wow, you know, that is, and I hadn't even thought about it. I hadn't even thought about it as we were,
It's such a subconscious thing, and you don't realize it, even an adult. I mean, if I hadn't have gone through all the, probably the education, you know, that I had gone through to understand that, I probably wouldn't have, you know, gone through that same process myself. So that's one of the reasons why it is good to have professionals to help families, you know, because they can point things out, and then all of a sudden the families can, the light goes off in the families. Oh, and in hindsight, it seems so obvious, but sometimes even the obvious, unless it's, is not really obvious. You know, it's only obvious in hindsight. That's why we have that phrase, hindsight 2020.
Yeah,
well,
always...
and not only that. Go ahead, Dave.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, with the statistics being like 50% of marriage is ending in divorce, and I know that that's probably... In some respects, that's probably a lower number. So it's almost, it's probably more than one out of two. This has to be such a huge, huge thing that families and parents are going through. From your perspective, is there one or two things that if our listeners are listening to today and they just realize that, like this little light went off in my head, is there things that they can do themselves? You know, maybe something as simple as just forgiving themselves for that and moving on, maybe not realizing that there's been a lot of life choices and decisions in your own life that's maybe been affected by that and you hadn't even realized it, just like I did just now. Kind of had a little epiphany right there. And also, is there things that, especially with younger kids, that the parents really can do that? I mean, obviously, if you're a preteen or a teenager, you know, you have more of a sense of who you really are. So it's not so much that you're kind of going to grow through that and maybe kind of forget about it like I did, but there's really going to be some emotional scars there. Are there things that parents can do just really simply, besides just telling them it's not their fault? Is there things that they can show them and do? Is there books or places that they can go to read more? You know, obviously we want them all to call you and fill your calendar. But, you know, you see where I'm coming from, is there's little things that they can do that would really help that to start to move towards getting good communications between maybe a mom and a stepchild or a dad and a stepchild.
Okay, well, you actually, there's a couple of points that I want to make related to what you said. And the first thing is related to the statistic on divorce percent, because you had mentioned that it's probably undermined. And I want to bring attention to this because it is very much undermined. First of all, that statistic is based off of first marriages. And once that divorce happens, a lot of times, they get remarried. So the divorce rate for remarriages is statistically much higher. And I've seen it vary as little as 66% all the way up to 85% with children involved. These statistics on stepfamilies are not part of the Census Bureau. So because of that, there is no specific statistic that can pinpoint the exact percentage, unfortunately. The other thing I want to point out with that statistic is that many people who have been divorced already don't want to get a divorce the second time for several different reasons. So they cohabit instead of getting married. And in fact, even a lot of first-time relationships, they tend to cohabitate because either their parents got divorced and they don't want to get divorced, or maybe it's financial issues or spiritual issues, whatever it is, a lot of people cohabitate nowadays more than get married. So if we were to factor in all the people who cohabitate and then break up, I mean, you're going to have a much higher statistic than 50%. So that was the first point I wanted to make. The other thing, as far as things that parents could do, step-parents and biological parents alike, if they're, again, the quality time with kids is very important. And as a step-parent, one of the things, discipline is a very big issue. So as a step-parent, in order, you want to try to reduce that automatic resentment. Kids have an automatic resentment, step-parents, just because, you know, a lot of times they don't like them. So the step-parent has, first of all, come to, into the step-family with the perspective of understanding that and try to not push themselves too much onto the kids too soon. Try to give them a little bit of space. And this is especially important with regard to discipline. Even biological parents tend to want the step-parent to help with discipline issues. I mean, let's face it, as a single parent, it's really difficult to do all the disciplining yourself. And when they get involved with somebody, they're wanting that help, and they're wanting a little relief. But the step-parent can offer relief in a lot of other ways that does not include discipline. One, they can support the biological parent, and whatever the, a lot of times one of the issues is related to differing opinions of what discipline should be. And first times have those differences of opinions as well, but it's not as big of an issue because all the kids are biological kids to both the mom and the dad. As a step family, the step parent tends to, and the biological parent tend to disagree, but because one person has a biological bond and the other one doesn't, those disagreements tend to erupt into really big arguments and really big issues because the biological parent is saying, look, they're my kids, they're not yours, so whatever I say goes. And quite honestly, unfortunately, as a step parent, that's difficult, but they should initially step back and let the step parent, I mean, let the biological parent do the discipline. Now, what I recommend, though, is that the step parent and biological parent spend time together when they first move in together, spend time together without the kids, talking about what discipline is, rules for the household, setting up rules. And at this point, though, the biological parent should have the authority over those rules, because they are, the kids are the biological kids for him or her. And that way, and they should also set up the consequences for breaking those rules. So as a step-parent, this is very beneficial, and this should be considered a relief at this point for the step-parent, because now when the biological parent is not around, the step-parent is only enforcing rules set up by the biological parent, and setting up the consequences set forth by the biological parent. This reduces down the resentment of the kids, because now the kids, because they're more receptive to what the biological parent says, they don't want to listen to the step parent. But then there's going to be other issues that arise. You know, you don't think through all the things that could possibly happen. So there are going to be situations that the step-parent has to deal with when the biological parent is not around. And under those circumstances, the step-parent just has to make their own decision on what to do based off of what is morally right, ethically right, what is has the best interest of the child, and be as fair as possible. If they have their own biological kids, they have to mentally be alert as to if they're treating the kids differently. All of those things considered, they have to make their own decision. And then the biological parent, when he or she comes home, should support whatever the step parent does, regardless, because they are an authority figure, and that will build the reputation as an authority figure with the kids. Because sometimes what happens is the biological parent comes home and disagrees with the discipline parent has done, whatever, however they handled it. And then that creates more rift, because then the kids think, well, if my mom or dad doesn't agree with the step parent, I definitely don't have to. So the biological parent should just support the step parent when at all possible. I mean, and if they don't agree with it, then that's something that they take care of away from the kids and in private.
Well, that's some good logical advice that I think everybody who's in that situation should pay attention to. You know, but you were talking earlier about, and we were trying to discuss the percentage of divorces and the fact that I didn't realize remarriages were as high as they were, and the fact they don't even take in cohabitation as part of it. And that's really, you know, that could be just as devastating as if you were married and divorced, the emotional ride.
Yeah.
But my thought is, it seems like it's almost too easy to get married, that we should maybe require people to stop and think and go through some education before they do get married. What are your thoughts on that?
I have lots of thoughts on that. First of all, the reason why that's so difficult is there are so many different reasons why people separate. And whether they separate from a cohabitation standpoint or separate because they were legally married. And that is not exclusive to any age group. It's not exclusive to any race, ethnicity, culture, or anything. All across the board, all categories of people and religions experience the separation. And because of that, there are so many factors to consider that when you, if we were to set up some extra formalities or classes or something of that nature, you know, you're still going to experience that separation. You're still going to experience that divorce because there's no way to cover all of those issues. Really, I think that's just going to encourage people to cohabitate more than to get married. And we already have a high cohabitation rate. I believe that the best way to do this is by empowering people. Because the other thing with regard to trying to add extra formalities is people tend to resent that. You know, when people get divorced, a lot of people resent those classes they have to take. How dare somebody else tell me how to be a parent? How dare somebody else tell me? I mean, so even they'll go through the formalities, but they're not really taking heed to what they're learning. They don't really view that they need or should have. So really what we should do is empower people, the people who are already receptive. So if we spread awareness, like what we did about the divorce issues, I mean, really, step families is still a concern of the new millennium, whereas divorce now is more accepted and we have a lot of more understanding about divorce. It's kind of accepted. But that's because we've had now several decades of learning what divorce was about and understanding it, whereas step families is still fairly new. So really, if we spread awareness of just building healthy relationships, how to discern a healthy relationship from an unhealthy relationship, and try to build that, whether it is the youth, young adults, older adults, and just build that those healthy relationships as much as possible. And really, part of that is by example and just trying to do that as educate ourselves as much as possible so that we can then pass that vicariously through the people that we associate with and our loved ones, whether it be our children, our nieces, our nephews, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, and we spread it that way. Then people tend to be more receptive to it. They see it, and then they see, wow, that's something I want. That's something I want to learn more about. So what can I do to have a healthier relationship? They'll see other healthy relationships and say, you know, is mine healthy? And then they'll start looking at their own situation and seeing what they could do differently. Those are the people that we want to take those classes. We want to have those classes available. We want to have the materials available. But we don't want to force it upon people because, quite we're not getting to the people who really want it. We want the people who want it to have it, because those are the people that are going to make a difference in their own lives and the people around them. I hope that wasn't, covered the issue fairly well.
No, but yeah, and I'm glad you said that. It's something that should be considered, but not from the point of view that it's mandatory, from a point of view from it will benefit us, therefore we want it. We want to look into what makes a healthier marriage.
Right.
And, yeah,
I am all for offering it. I mean, like, more churches are offering that type of stuff, but not everybody is a member of a church. So having more community groups and just having it readily available, is definitely a good thing.
Yeah, but we're still faced with a high divorce rate. So what are we doing, or what's the key to help reduce that?
Well, one thing is educating people about step families, since the divorce rate for first time marriages is 50%, but it has been that way for a long time, for a few decades now. So I view that as a positive thing, because that has not increased, okay? And believe it or not, I run across many people who are still married for the first time and have never divorced. And even though I help step families, I mean, I am very happy to run across those people who have never divorced. I mean, that's, my heart goes out to them. I mean, that's a good thing. So really the key is helping the families who have already been divorced once, and because that tends to be the prevalent statistic, because that is more often the case now. There's more of those situations. So if we start educating people on what makes a step family different than a biological family, then when people form their family the second time around, then they're not going to try to treat it the same way they treat it the first time, because it's not going to work. And even counselors tend to treat families based off of what works with biological families. And step families are, just by its sheer nature of what it is, different. So there is no one specific key. Again, it is just more awareness about what step families are, because there are more step family scenarios than there are intact families. There are a lot of first-time marriages that are still lasting, getting divorced. So, again, my philosophy is to educate people who are already divorced and just dating. My vision for my company is that they are going to be more proactive, understanding that step families are different, so when they do start dating, when they do start forming that union of a step family, think to themselves, wow, you know, I should probably get educated on what I can do as a parent to make sure that my step family doesn't end in divorce or separation like one of those other statistics. So my vision is for people to be more proactive but before they can be proactive, they have to first understand that there is a difference and understand that they should seek out that knowledge.
Yeah, you've talked about when now we're into the step family and trying to make that work, and that it is different from the first-time marriage. And we run into the concept of outsider and insider. So why don't you explain to our audience what that means to you, and what that step family should be looking at?
Well, that's also a good question, because you're right. The step parent coming in is viewed as an outsider to the kids, and sometimes even the biological parent. Basically, the concept of outsider versus insider is I compare it to how you feel about your best friend. They are an insider to you. You feel very comfortable with them. You can tease them. You can give them a hard time. Sometimes you can you can even insult them and they're not going to be upset with you. They're going to laugh, or, you know, because you're comfortable, you know what they're going to accept from you. You know what you could get away with, and vice versa. You are very readily receptive to forgiving your best friend, even your brothers and sisters, who some people, not everyone considers their brothers and sisters their best friends, but yet we still forgive our brothers and sisters because they're family. But that, because they're insiders. But we don't do that for step parents. And part of the reason we don't is because they're viewed as an outsider. So it takes time. I mean, even when you met your best friend, did you become best friends overnight? Most people don't. Most people develop that you can, we attract people who are like-minded, and sometimes we take to a person very quickly. And sometimes it's an automatic connection that we have with somebody. But that's not the case with our step-parents, because our biological parent connected with the step-parent and fell in love, but the kids didn't necessarily do that. It takes a lot of time and experiences for a step-parent, step-child to transcend from the outsider to the insider. Just like some people, it takes a long time for them to become an insider with friends. The same thing goes for a step-parent and step-child. So that's a big thing that a step-parent, step-families have to overcome. And one of the ways is to try to build memories with the kids. I mean, if step-families can try to build family experiences, they try to add family experiences. If the biological parent has quality time that they have with their kids, and then at other times, as a step-family as a whole, both biological parents, step-parent, and kids, if they do things together, then that will build memories, and eventually, with some time, it will definitely build. The step-parent, their biggest thing that they want to do is always respect the family history of the biological family. And by doing so, and just simple things like not talking bad about the non-custodial ex-spouse, the non-custodial biological parent, they will build a respect. The kids will start respecting the step-parent. That's actually the first step in becoming a step-family unit, is building that respect. Then you build a rapport. And then that turns into a friendship, and then that turns into love. And gradually, the outsider then becomes an insider, but it doesn't happen overnight. So in the interim, between transcending to becoming an insider, if the step-parent just has always treat, the courtesy should always be there, and just fair judgment and being fair and consistent, that respect will automatically be built. And eventually, before they know it, they're going to be an insider, and they're not even going to realize exactly when it happened.
Well, and I think, you know, you brought up a really interesting point, and I think this is kind of leads into what we were thinking as far as kids in general. A lot of the issues that we deal with are really, I mean, they're just horrendous. They're things that most people kind of want to not talk about or not want to think about. And we see kids in crisis in so many different situations. And it really does come back to a communication factor almost in every single one of those. We recently had a guest on that we talked about really high-risk kids. He helps them when it's kind of like their last step before they end up going in the prison system. And one of the things that he talked about, and it just brings this up again, is just really this communication that is lost. And I think from a from a single parent to bringing in a spouse or a significant other, one of the things that, you know, I think that really would help, and I wonder how much of this you see, that when you kind of get into doing your counseling and everything, and you start to kind of unfold all of the things that are happening, how much of a factor of bringing a quote-unquote outsider, because this person is an outsider to this circle of the family, do you find that parents in general just kind of want to avoid this and not do this because they're afraid of all these other things? Whereas if they had just started out in the beginning of just really trying to build a friendship or a bond with this outsider with their kids, and I know that sounds pretty simplistic, like, oh, it should just be so easy, and it's probably one of the most difficult things they'll ever do is bringing a new person right in to be that person. But really, isn't it just boiling down to that one simple factor, that if your kids really truly understand and trust you, you've got a semi-good relationship with them so that you can do this, wouldn't it just be a matter of just sitting down and really kind of just doing that? Introduce this person, bring that person into your home or in your circle of trust, and do it right from the get-go with the idea that you're not going to have all these long-term problems down the road because you didn't do that. Do you find that they kind of push that to the side and think, okay, I'm in a relationship, it's all about me, I'm falling in love, I know all these things, you know, so they push their kids away, and if they'd actually done the reverse of that, which it would be really hard to do if you're in that situation, you know, especially for us guys, it'd scare us right to death, right, because all of a sudden now we're having to, but wouldn't it, really from that woman's point of view or that man's point of view, if they did that right from the beginning, a lot of this would kind of be settled long before they be either,
absolutely,
you know.
As a matter of fact, I've also had the pleasure of talking with step families who did transition successfully transition to being healthy and did not have a lot of issues, and that is one of the things that they had, that they did and went going for them. They had an open door policy with their kids, and I highly recommend this. They sit down with their kids when the union first happens. Biological parents, step parent, and kids all together have a table discussion, an open table discussion. That means that the kids are allowed to speak freely whatever is on their mind. And that opens the communication, and that's very important. It's difficult sometimes to hear what the kids have to say, but if they have this perspective to begin with, then that means that they're going to take the effort to heed whatever the kid has to say and try to work through those. So parents who do that do have a better transition and less stress and less issues. The other thing is between, and they should schedule those table discussions. I recommend once a week, once every other week, until, you know, and this is going to vary by family because it doesn't have to last forever, but at least initially for a while, for months, you know, a few months at least, you know, and like I said, that's going to vary by family. And between scheduled open table discussions, the biological parents should always have an open door policy with their kid so that their child can come to them at any time. And this should be both with the custodial parent as well as the non-custodial parent, and be able to feel comfortable saying, you know, I really don't agree with what the step parent did, or I'm really having a problem with my step sibling, or it could be something simple, you know, like that. It could be something more complex, whatever it is. Building this communication is also building the trust. And yes, it sounds like a simple thing, but the other thing you mentioned is sometimes we don't always do what's simple. And there's a lot of psychological reasons for that. Some people don't think about it because they have not been exposed to that as a child in their own family. We tend to duplicate what we learn in our own families. So whatever we learn as a kid growing up in our own families, that's duplicate. Whether it's right or wrong, that's all we know. So it's kind of, and even sometimes if we think that that's not the best way to do things, because we're not always exposed to what an alternative positive solution is, we tend to naturally fall back on what we learned because, again, it's all we know. So, which is also a lesson for parents, you know, who say, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. We recommend, I as a stepfamily coach and other family counselors, recommend replacing that with, here, this is what you do. We try to reduce the amount of don't statements as much as possible and say, do this. Because without replacing the negative with the positive, the kid and adults will naturally go back to what they're not supposed to do because it's all they know. So I think I had another thought, but I lost it because I got but you know, so many thoughts going around my head. But, you know, but that is very important, and I'm glad you brought that up as far as the communication. That is very important.
Well, I like the fact that you mentioned it's really a smart move to take and replace it with a positive instead of the negative. And in other words, it's an action step in the right direction for somebody to take.
Yes. And it's something that we don't always think about, you know. It's just, so having somebody point that out, and sometimes, like I said, even parents don't even know what that positive thing is. So, again, that's one of the advantages of having, you know, a professional to help them through that and say, okay, this is what your positive should be. We've been there and we've been educated.
In your position in all the education and the counseling that you've given other people, do you find that a majority of kids from these broken homes or working through these stepfamily homes is where you find your at-risk kids more generally than not?
It's not just stepfamilies, though. When I first started on embarking on my college education, I actually specialized in juvenile delinquency and wanted to go into criminology, and personal experience segued here. But there is definitely a correlation. If you were to look at all the at-risk kids and a lot of your juvenile delinquents or the serious offenders, if you were to look at them and you were to look at their home life, how they brought up. Now, statistically speaking, a lot of them did come from intact families. But if you were just then their family situations qualitatively, then you would see that there are a lot of miscommunications or there's a lot of other issues going on, a lack of communication, a lack of understanding. I want to point out that it's not just from divorced homes, because a lot of at-risk kids do come from homes that have never been divorced. And even, you know, predators and pedophiles still find kids of healthy, intact families as victims, unfortunately. So I do want to make that distinction. But, yes, there is definitely a higher percentage. I shouldn't say higher percentage, but there is definitely a correlation on those at-risk kids because, again, they have all that angst inside them, you know, raised by gender, because boys tend to have a lot more testosterone. They tend to be more aggressive. So they're going to more apt to go out and look for other kinds of trouble just to get rid of all of that energy, pent-up energy and frustration that's inside them. They need a release for that. So kids tend to, they want to get that out and have a release for that. So there is definitely a correlation there, but I just also wanted to make the distinction. It's not only from divorced families or single-parent households. There is a stigma attached to that for a long time.
So how do you think the Internet has played in with those children trying to get that pent-up aggression out, and how's it caused them to maybe get into more trouble than others?
Well, again, the Internet is both a wonderful thing because it's so easily accessible, but again, that is also part of the reason why it makes it such a high-risk thing, because the internet and the social media is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It doesn't go away. You can get on at any time from the library, from your PDA, from your phone, home computers. You can get on there anywhere and talk to somebody somewhere. And so, again, people are seeking out somebody to identify with, somebody to vent to, somebody to hang out with. And sometimes they're going to run into other people who want to get into trouble. And if that person is somebody that, you know, they identified with on one level, then that person is going to be somebody that it's a local community network. I mean, because sometimes the internet, we don't just meet people in other states and other countries. Sometimes it's also people in our communities. So then we meet, and kids, you know, who meet, and kids of divorced parents, because once they get divorced, they tend to work more. So they're not around as much. They're very involved with being at work and earning a living, that sometimes they forget or don't think about all the things that are going on in their kids' lives. Sometimes they don't realize who is friends with their kids and what their kids are doing. And, of course, the kids will say one thing, and that doesn't necessarily mean that's what they're doing. You know, they know if they're doing something wrong, and they're not going to tell their mom or dad that they're doing something wrong. They're not going to say, "Mom, I'm going out drinking." They're not going to say, "Mom, I'm going out so-and-so me to marijuana." They're not going to say those things. So because divorced parents tend to be working more, some of these things slip by. And the internet makes it readily available to find those people without even trying. You don't even have to try hard because it's accessible all the time. And it's harder for parents to know who the kids are because, again, it's a name on a computer sometimes. It's not even a face. So it's not like the old days where the parents got to know the parents of the kids or the friends of your kids. And it's not like you only meet them at parties or in the neighborhood. Now their name's on computers. So, and the kids will say, "Well, I met so-and-so," and they'll say all the positive things. And all those things that the kid says, I'm sure is true. They just conveniently leave out the other stuff.
Yeah, and actually you could visit several different friends on the internet as opposed to visiting your neighbors in several different homes in one evening. So,
exactly.
It does make it a unique situation, and I agree. And then it gets into, you know, whether or not, you know, Bill and I, we've had this discussion with other guests of the point of monitoring your children's computer activity and whether, you know, some people think, "Oh, I don't want to spy on my child," but yet they're at risk in the sense that, right, as we've talked about, you know, the parent is trying to make a living. They're not at home as often. It's the kids have become more turnkey, and they're left alone, and so they are. They're out there looking, and maybe that's the at-risk part about it. So,
right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you brought up a good point as far as spying. My personal, and this is a very big issue for a lot of parents because they don't want to spy. They don't want to seem like they don't trust their kids. So I want to mention my alternative because, quite honestly, me personally, I'm not a fan of spying either. But you don't have to spy is what I'm saying. The key is to build your relationship with your child as early as possible before they get to those at-risk years. And, of course, you know, if your kids are already at those at-risk years, it's not too late. But you want to start as early as possible just to build your rapport with your child as much as possible. If you build that relationship with your child and have that open door policy as early as possible, and literally take the time, you know, even if it's only once a week, to talk to your kid about just anything and everything, you know, from as early of an age as possible, then you will, they will be able to make informed decisions, educated decisions. You get to know your child on a more personal level. So you don't have to then, when they get to that at-risk age, you don't have to spy on them because you've already built that trust in them, or they built that trust in you to be able to go to somebody and ask them. Again, your kids are still not going to tell you if they're doing something wrong, okay? But by just talking to them about, as if they were your friend, but of course I don't want to use that term because that sometimes parents take the friend thing too far and be less of an authoritative person. But as far as talking with your kids about real issues, take advantage of teaching moments. Talk to them about, you know, what's wrong with alcohol, too much alcohol, drinking alcohol before you're legal to, and even after you're legal, keeping at a minimum, what's wrong with drugs, and point out maybe other people who have done wrong, who have been addicted. Take advantage of those teaching moments as a parent early on and as much as possible, so that when they're at that at-risk age, they already are making informed decisions. So that way the parent won't feel the need to spy.
I think, one of the things that you bring up really, it's a running theme. I was remembering having Nancy McBride on. She's a big part of the National Missing and Exploited Children's Program. And one of the things that she talked about, and you nailed it. She talked about taking 25 minutes a day. And it's funny, if you were to ask a parent and they were really honest, that's the key, if they were really honest and actually said how much time they spent with one of their children, especially if you've got two or three like I have and Dave's got five, you have your hands full, so 25 minutes with each child during the day, I think that parents would really... One thing, they would be surprised, and I think another thing is they would be, a little self-conscious of that and realize, oh my gosh, how many days have gone by that I haven't just spent even 5 minutes. So 25 minutes doesn't seem like very long. When you say it out loud, it's like 25 minutes, that's nothing. But really in a child's life, it's huge. Those 25 minutes that you spend with a child in a day, and she talked about that's one of the most... That's probably the crux of their whole system, because she sees things that, gosh, we don't even want to talk about. I mean, she's dealt with this and worked directly with John Walsh and all of the things that went on with Adam Walsh. So she was right in the beginning of that. And so she sees this really from kind of a, right from the street level. She understands what happens with kids when they're in these situations. And really, bottom line, it goes right back to what you said, spending a few minutes with your kids, and especially if you know this. I was thinking of the internet myself, and I'm probably kind of putting words in your mouth here, but really from, if you're going to be a part of a step family, or if you're dating and you're thinking that, this is going to get serious, and I want to get to know how to be a good dad to these kids when I'm... Turn to the internet for that information. In an information explosion around us, I find it really interesting how people don't have enough answers when there's answers everywhere if they just look for them. And I think that really is the bottom line here, communication and looking for answers and solutions. So one of the things I wanted you to talk about for just a couple of minutes, if you don't mind, is let people know some of the solutions that are out there, what you offer, because they need to know that, but as well kind of what's out there in general that they can look for, not just specifically your services, but kind of in a general rule what they can look for as well. Because when they go looking, they're going to find it. Am I right? In this day and age, there's just
right.
Seems like there's answers everywhere.
Yes, you bring up a very good point. So I will mention both my services and as well as other places they can go. One, if people are involved with a church, that is usually one place to go, their local church. I also highly, and if they're online, I highly recommend the Child Rescue Network. They have resources. They do presentations. They'll go out to workplaces. They'll go out and talk to homes. They do fingerprinting and all kinds of free services for parents. And I'm a big fan of them and highly recommend them as well. And really, online, there's a wealth of information. There's all kinds of websites. If people are not on the Internet, they can go to their Blue Pages or their government pages and look for counseling, look for if they have insurance at work, they can go to their EAP for counseling. The government usually does have some programs as well. And, of course, on the Internet, all you have to do is do a search in Google or Yahoo or whatever. Now, me personally, I want to talk about what I do as I'm not a typical counselor or coach. As a matter of fact, all through college, I always told myself, I'm not going to be a counselor. I'm not going to be a counselor because I didn't want to tell people what to do. In the end, I'm a coach. I don't
so
tell
suggest.
People what to do. I empower people. What?
I say you
I
suggest you then.
Oh, right.
I
do make suggestions. That's right. but it's based off of empowering people. I help people come to me and I give them insight into what their situation is. You know, I help them understand what other people in their family is going through. I help them understand what they themselves are going through on a subconscious level. That in itself empowers people and gives them insight. Sometimes they just don't know what to do next. And instead of telling them what they should do, I will give them the option. If this is one option, and if you do this, these are going to be your probable consequences. If you do option B, then these are going to be your probable consequences. Which consequences do you want to deal with? Do you want to deal with the consequences of A or B? I'm not telling them what to do. They're making their own decision, but it's
right.
Based now they have a more informed decision that they can make. The other thing that makes me different than a lot of counselors is, well, first of all, I understand step families, and not all counselors do, but and there's a lot more that do now. I want to say that. So if someone's in a step family situation, then, you know, there are other counselors now that and step family coaches and foundations that do understand the difference between step-family dynamics and biological families. So I do want to encourage people to do that, even if it's not me. If they're in step-family, find someone who is knowledgeable about step-families. But the one thing that makes me different is that I work with all members of the family. I do not believe that it's just the kids' problem. It is the parents have to learn how to deal with the kids as well, both the step-parent and biological. I do not play the blame game either. I do not take sides. I've been to counselors, and unfortunately, they're only human, and a lot of them do take sides because they identify with one side or the other. I don't. It's not because I have a policy to not do it. It's because I truly believe there are two sides to every story. In most circumstances, both the biological parent and the step-parent are right in their own perspective. But because I understand their perspective, that gives me the ability to be more objective. And so I work with the step-parent, biological parent, non-custodial biological parent when possible, as well as all the kids. I'll even work with grandparents if possible. I offer three services. I offer consultations, which is a one-time thing if you're just starting a step family and you're not there yet, maybe you only need a consultation, which is a one-time. I offer mediations. Maybe you're dealing with an argument that you keep having the same argument over and over and over again. So I'll do a mediation. It's not an official mediation. I want to make that clear that I'm not an official mediator. It's a method I learned through the Step Family Foundation. It's called Fight Fair, but it does help resolve issues in a comfortable atmosphere. And then I also offer a longer-term coaching service. I offer a free evaluation for every family or person that contacts me. The free evaluation is, I don't charge somebody initially for any service without giving them a free evaluation first. I always give the free evaluation because it's only through that free evaluation that allows me to understand their situation and allows me to be able to make a recommendation on what they should do next. Sometimes that outside resources other than my own. And then I also offer whichever services of mine I think would be most recommended for their situation. And sometimes I'll start, if it's a longer-term coaching service that they require, I will further recommend who I will start counseling with or coaching with, whether it be the kids or the parents. Sometimes it's the parents and kids together. Sometimes it's just the kids. Sometimes it's just the step and biological parent. Not every situation is the same. So, and if they are interested in my services, I definitely want to direct them to my website or my blog. It's SensibleStepSolutions.com, and that is one S between Step and Solutions, SensibleStepSolutions.com. And my blog is sensiblesteps.blogspot.com. Then they could go to either of those places. They could join my mailing list or contact me through my blog.
Wow, Bill.
My email is Judy at Sensible. Pardon?
Go ahead, Judy. Are you there?
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think you cut out for a second there.
I didn't mean to cut that last part out. Did you finish?
Oh, my email address is judy@sensiblestepsolutions.com. And they can get to that as well as my phone number on my website, 407-739-4892.
And that is a lot of information. We have actually gone over an hour. Can you believe we've been on this long, Bill, this time?
It just blew by. I was just such an awesome job that Judy has done in sharing all that information with us. It's amazing. I looked at the clock and I was like, holy cow. So definitely know as an audience, as you're listening to this, that we definitely want everyone to get the message. And that's why we're willing to go a little long. We appreciate Judy actually taking a little extra time of her day. We don't want to take too much of her time because she's very, very busy. Dave, any final thoughts?
Well, yeah, I'd like to hand over to Judy our Cyberhood Watch magic wand, and that is a wand that if you had a chance to make an effect, a difference on a local, national level, and by waving the wand to improve families, what would that be?
My biggest thing, if I was to be able to wave on, would be education, free education for all children all the way through high school and make the resources available. I mean, it's a little bit different than, a stepfamily issue, but it is very much affects kids and their families. Education is so very important. People who have a quality education do so much better, not just academically, but emotionally and mentally and intellectually as well. So education is very important, and if I had a magic wand, that's what I would do. Make education free for all children all the way through high school at least, and make the resources equal all across the board for all schools. That means equal salaries, competitive salaries for good teachers. That means computers, books, you know, I'm a big fan of extracurricular activities like band, artist, you know, bring back the pottery and stuff that, you know, some places take away when they're trying to do the budget cuts. So.
Wow, that's so awesome. I think you know, I remember when I was a kid and going through school and we had those extra activities, and then we've kind of gone through this generation of kids where it just seemed like activities was everything, and, you know, the moms were running from 40 different things, and, you know, this was a big tragedy, why were families so busy? And now, through budget cuts, all of those things are disappearing, the music programs and the things, you know, schools let those go, and they don't, you know, they don't understand that that's such a big part of, you know, a complete child. Every child has a talent.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, and where are they going to find that talent? If they don't use that talent for good things, art, music, relationships, mentoring, you know, I mean, a child can be such a wonderful mentor, you know, to younger kids if given that opportunity. You know, I love the old
right.
days of the apprentice, you know, the apprenticeship. The apprentice, you know, went to work with the old-time guy. My background is in heating and air conditioning, and the first guy that I worked with was one of those old-timers, you know, and he taught me things about life that I didn't realize until way later when I was much older. I was like, wow, you know, he was such a good boss. He treated me fair, and it was because he was one of those old-timers. He taught from an apprentice point of view, you know, that what I'm handing off to you is something that I've spent my whole entire lifetime to learn, and you get to learn this in just 2 or 3 years. Just a beautiful process. So I love your answer to that. Thank you so much, Judy. Thank you for your time today. I just don't know if people really realize how valuable this wonderful internet we have. I mean, the opportunity to bring Judy on our show today, have her come and share for an hour or so. This is powerful, folks. You need to download these shows, share them with your friends and family, because I guarantee you there's not a person that listens to this show that doesn't know someone that needs the information that Judy shared today. I promise you that there is someone out there that's looking for answers in their own relationships and dealing with their stepfamily parents or stepfamily children, that they're looking for answers, and here it is. Judy's given them a roadmap. She's given them alternatives and solutions. So thank you so much for that today, Judy. I just really
thank
appreciate
you.
It. Don't be a stranger. You're welcome to come back if you have new things coming up. Please let us know. We're happy to bring our guests back and share a different message, or maybe just like the old thing, just repetition, repetition, repetition. Get that message out there one more time that there are solutions. So we're going to wrap it up
All right.
on that high note. And thank you again. Dave, any final thoughts or comments? And I'll let you take us out on the show, bud.
No, nothing to add. Just want to thank Judy for coming by and kind of reiterate what Bill said. It's a great opportunity. The information that we, fortunately, Bill and I are able to share with our audience is a wonderful thing, and I'm glad we're able to do it. So thank you for your time, and I also agree with Bill. Any other time when you'd like to come back and have something to share with us, we'd be glad to have you back.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I'm sure I will.
Thanks, Judy.
Okay.
Thank you very much
bye-bye.
For inviting. All right, bye-bye.